Hello and welcome to the Journal of Accountancy podcast. I'm Courtney Vian, a senior editor with the Journal of Accountancy. Our guest today is Troy Ashby, CPA, the founder of recruiting firm Benchmark Search. They're based in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and they work with accounting and finance professionals. Troy's worked for Big Four and regional firms before founding Benchmark, and he'll be speaking with us about the way employers onboard employees and why it matters so much. First, can you tell us what you mean by the onboarding experience?
Certainly. So onboarding experience would be classified as, which by the way is still part of the interview experience, because those first 90 days are pretty critical. But the onboarding experience would be immediately following an offer all the way through the first 90 days and arguably through the first year of employment.
And why does the onboarding experience influence retention? Why is it so important?
Yeah, so kind of important to understand, right? When employees start a new job, there's a certain level of uncertainty. You know, they just broke up with their previous employer. Maybe they turned down a counteroffer in the process. Other companies are pursuing them and likely still being recruited. And so you really want to create an emotional attachment as well as a relational one as soon as possible. And I read a survey recently that one third of 1,000 respondents to a survey said they had to quit a job within the first 6 months of starting it.
Wow.
I mean, it's scary. One third. I mean, and you know, of those, 16 to 17% left in the first 90 days.
Huh. So, what are some ways employers could improve the onboarding process?
All right. So first thing I can tell you is, and I said this earlier, the onboarding process starts as soon as they say yes. And, you know, sometimes that's given through a recruiter. Sometimes that's given through HR. And sometimes the manager themselves communicates the offer and receives the acceptance. Whether or not they sign an offer letter or not, your onboarding process starts with a welcome to the team. And I see that as a call and welcome them to the team. Congratulate them. You know, we look forward to having you. Making that sense of an immediate attachment and feeling welcome. And making them feel like, hey, I made the right decision. My boss just called me and wow, I cannot wait to start. The other things that they can do is before they start, make some time. Take them to coffee, take them to lunch, or have somebody from your team do that. And realize that time doesn't always allow that. But if you can, that's going to certainly reduce the possibility of during their 2 weeks' notice, whether their current boss is continuing to put on guilt trips or they're wavering because they had two decisions to make and they're like, did I make the right decision? And sometimes that lunch or even the invite to lunch does enough to again, make them feel more ownership of the decisions that they've made. On their first day, you know, I want to make sure that there's a team lunch. Whether the leader is there or not, several members of the team, get the paperwork done, get acquainted with a new workspace, get a tour. Little things that, again, are just making them feel welcome. Having a roadmap would be something else that I would certainly make sure, depending on the number of people you hire. Companies that hire in more frequently are usually better at having a roadmap of what onboarding looks like for, you know, the first 30, 60, 90, 120 days. Those that don't hire as frequent, I would strongly encourage you to kind of understand how you're going to slowly evolve and ramp this person into their position and the team. So I'd really make sure that if you can improve your onboarding process at all, it's to actually have one.
Yeah, that's something for smaller employers to take notice of. Yeah. How soon should you assign your new hires work?
I would challenge anybody that they need to have work in front of them immediately. Especially as accountants, we analyze everything, we overanalyze everything, we want to be put to work. And even if they're not completely up to speed, sometimes struggling through that and making sure that they understand what they're going to be getting themselves into, and honestly, reconfirming some of the stuff that they heard in the interview and tangibly seeing that in front of them is important.
What about when you get towards the end of the first 90 days? What should employers be doing then?
A typical onboarding process is 90 days. I think I mentioned before, it actually continues to be ongoing. But that 90-day mark would be, let's picture it like your kid's going off to college, right? They're going to be a little bit more independent. Accountability starts in. They should be able to do the job with little to no supervision. It doesn't mean that the onboarding's over, but when you're really looking at getting them fully up to speed, that 90-day mark would be some sort of a graduation. And I would tell people to do a 30-day review. I would also look at doing a 90-day review and then understanding that now's the time that you can challenge them further. Again, if we hear 16 to 17% leave in the first 90 days, and up to a third said they would leave in the first 6 months, we still have more work to do. And sometimes that is very well defined in a 90-day review and then what you expect now.
What are some mistakes that employers sometimes make during the onboarding process?
Man, I'm glad you asked that. There's a few different mistakes that employers make, or maybe let's call it improvements. One of the first ones would be when the person shows up to their new job, they're excited, they've told their friends, they've told their family, and they walk in and they're greeted by the receptionist or whoever's at the door, and their boss isn't there yet. You're excited. This person has lost sleep over it. There's some anxiety and some anxiousness, and then they don't get greeted by the boss, or the boss isn't there yet, and they didn't know it, right? So that's the first thing that kind of gives them a little bit of anxiety, because that may be one of few people that they know that they have a comfortable level with so far. Something else that happens way too often, probably more often than anybody would like to admit, and I think we've all been guilty of it, but making sure somebody owns this part of the process, is showing up and their office isn't set up yet, or their desk isn't set up yet. This is not a time to go to the IT department and find their computer or set up their phone. That stuff needs to be done in advance, because you don't want them feeling like you forgot they were going to start that day, that you're, racing around at 7 in the morning to oh my gosh, John's starting today. And I would tell people that pro tip that I give to folks is, for this reason, in case you do ever forget or you aren't ready for whatever reason, is I suggest a mid-morning start time. And starting somebody at 10 a.m. allows for fewer errors in case somebody wasn't able to have their desk set up Friday before they left. I think to that same vein, onboarding isn't always assigned to one person. And sometimes we don't know who's in charge of what. Delegating it to a team, I think, is critical. So somebody's in charge of greeting them. Somebody's in charge of a tour. One other person is in charge of taking and organizing a lunch. And somebody else is in charge of making sure their desk is set up. If you have kind of an army of folks delegated and in charge of onboarding, it certainly makes it a lot easier.
Again, that was Troy Ashby, CPA of Benchmark Search Group. This has been the Journal of Accountancy podcast. Thank you for listening.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.